Yeah,
How
exactly.
good's polio?
Wouldn't know. Got the vaccine, so you know.
I think we've got our
All right.
promo clip there.
Hello and welcome to another action-packed, hard-hitting episode of Who's Playing Who. I'm Adrian McMurray, and as the restrictions ease and sport begins to return, Matt and Tomo are back on deck to look at what awaits us all on the other side. Our panel is fired up over those flouting the rules and anti-vaxxers, and we'll dissect the global phenomenon that is The Last Dance. All that and more on this week's Who's Playing Who. Yes, Matt and Tomo are here. Shippy, unfortunately, unavailable after a strong return last week, but he has kindly sent us his input to sprinkle through the show. So we'll hear from Shippy in a way all throughout, but we'll say hello first to Matt.
Thank you. Good to be back. Shippy obviously doing the work from home thing on this podcast, just sending all his notes in and the rest of us work around it.
Oh, that's
too sociable now that the lockdowns have eased.
Very smart, very smart. And the voice you just heard there, Tomo Yee, what's happening in New Zealand?
Always a pleasure to hear a chore, boys. Not a lot. Well, I am the one doing the work here talking to you guys. So I don't know what Shippy's up to, but I would not miss this. Never.
Just doing the heavy lifting for an entire nation. That's what
that's the plan.
As we sort of ease into this episode, I was sort of thinking about during the last month since our last episode of the 7 years that have passed and how like quite successful all our teams have been. So if I was thinking about South Sydney won the NRL Premiership in 2014, the Wanderers won the Asian Champions League in 2014, New South Wales Origin side 2014, broke that drought. And then again, the last 2 years, 2018, 2019, they're on top now. Matt, Leicester, very successful.
Just a little bit successful, you know, winning the unwinnable title and then going to the last eight of the Champions League. Probably back in the Champions League next year. It's good times as a Leicester fan.
Absolutely. And like a dramatic rise as well for the, what was the Leicester update? Was that the old segment?
Yeah, I think we cut that too early. I think we were down in the Championship before we even suffered devastation at Watford. So it's been, you know, great times since we've been off the podcast.
And of course, Tomo, so 2012 was the last episode. The Lakers, they've
been really average ever since. They haven't made the playoffs since. I'm pretty sure that's when they flamed out. 2012, 2013, the Lakers signed, they traded for Dwight Howard and Steve Nash. There was a big Sports Illustrated cover saying this is going to be fun. Kobe tore his Achilles. The end of that season, the Lakers got swept to the playoffs and they haven't made it since. So this year was supposed to be the year that we were going to be back, top of the West. And then coronavirus happened and there's been no basketball for 2 months. So thank you for reminding me. Yeah, good times. Thanks, mate.
Okay, as you may or may not be aware, we hope you're aware, restrictions are easing and probably in your neck of the woods, depending on where you're listening to this. We won't go through all the different ins and outs for each state or territory or nation, wherever you are in the world. I'm sure there are other news outlets you can get that sort of information from or your relevant government authority. I'd be concerned if you were getting your news from Who's Playing Who, given that we did have 7 years off. Apology if that is the case. We'll try our best to catch you up another time. But things are changing. I don't know about you guys, but I've noticed out on the road, the roads are busier, more people out and about, you know, things are slowly starting to open up again. But before we look ahead to what's coming up, how have you guys been staying fit? You haven't been able to go to the gym. Have you been running, lifting? What's been going on?
So I was fortunate enough to rent a friend of mine owns a gym, so he had to close during our lockdown. So I managed to borrow a bit of equipment from him. So that kind of kept me a little bit sane and gave me a little bit of routine. But I am not a fan of running in the slightest. I'll run on the treadmill, but this was the first time I decided to take up outdoor running for a little bit to get a bit of cardio in. And I hated it. it does not agree with me. I don't like headwinds or an uneven surface. So I'm a bit of a precious runner, and it just didn't work well for me. And it's actually funny. One time, my friend who's a trainer said to me, "Look, I just don't think you have the legs for running," because I would cramp up a lot. So I was pretty proud of myself to get running. I downloaded Strava, followed Adrian. Yeah, no, so I did manage to get a little bit of exercise in regularly that kept me sane as best I could.
Most of the time, my fitness is kept up by the sport I play. So in summer, it gets very low when I'm playing cricket because, you know, not a whole lot of fitness. But in winter, I'm a bit better because I'm playing soccer, and we haven't been playing soccer, so I haven't been doing any kind of running. I've been walking a lot, trying to get kind of 100,000 steps a week going.
Nice. Which,
that's impressive.
I've been done it a few times, but even then I feel as though I'm not putting on weight, but I feel as though I'm just slowly destroying my physical fitness.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but where you've been exercising, if you've encountered a lot of people, but I've taken to running around the sort of local oval, and I kind of liken the experience a bit like Pac-Man. In that you're just constantly trying to avoid, think of the other people exercising as ghosts, and you're just constantly trying to avoid coming into contact with them. Otherwise, well, it might not be as dramatic as you die like Pac-Man does, but you never know, right?
it might take 10 to 14 days, but
I have noticed a few other interesting things though that I wanted to run past you guys to see whether it seems sort of normal, or I don't know, maybe I'm just going a bit stir crazy and I'm just sort of making up these backstories in my mind. But here's some things I've noticed in the park. There's one guy who lays out a yoga mat, sort of paces around. Now to set the picture, he's kind of got a thick Ranga long hair sort of done up in a bun. He sort of paces around the yoga mat, does like handstands and a few other sort of moves. At one point in like the several times I've seen him there, he then takes his shirt off and then continues on with his pacing and sort of doing those moves. Is that sort of, have you guys seen any of that action? Just me?
Yeah, not to that level. I'm fortunate though. I think that's a Waterloo thing. I have seen very busy kind of walking areas. Generally, I live on one that's not overly busy, but relatively busy, where it's people doing loops around a bay. There is the Bay Walk in Sydney, which is where I used to live, and that has just been packed with people, kind of defeating the purpose of socially distant exercise when there's 20,000 people doing a lap of a 7K walk and cyclists everywhere, and it's all over the place. But fortunately, there's no been really any characters. You just see people riding bikes that haven't ridden a bike in probably 20 years, or running. You can tell haven't ridden for a long, running for a long time. Probably shouldn't be running. That's about the weirdest it's got.
I can't say I have the same experience as you, Adrian. I admire the guy's confidence to take his shirt off and to do handstands. I also loathe him. But you know, like Matt was saying, while we were in lockdown, everyone was keeping their distance pretty well. But seeing a lot more cyclists and people going for walks, which was actually really cool, and I didn't realize New Zealand had that many bikes, so it was great.
More bikes or sheep? What is the what's the answer?
We might have to change that stereotype.
Yeah. Well, a couple of other ones quickly that I've seen. There was this guy. So it's just running laps, sort of not late at night, but the sun had gone down. It was about 6 o'clock. And I sort of caught up to him, and then he would take off. He was so much faster than me, unbelievable speed. And but he would sort of do a lap and then stop and start walking again. And then I'm just sort of keeping a consistent, you know, I'm not overly quick, but just sort of consistent going around. And I'd catch up to him because he's walking, and then he'd take off again. Do I smell? Is it something I said? I don't know. The other one was a group of, there's a trainer with one girl doing some sort of boxing training. And I sort of started to notice the group slowly swelled in numbers to the point where there are about four or five of them sort of training. Probably a usual PT setup, but does this guy have a harem? Putting it out there.
Are you witnessing the start of a cult? Is that what you're asking?
Potentially. all exercise.
Is it the cult named CrossFit? Is that the...
Potentially, but hey, you got to be...
Did he have a guitar careful. With him?
Yeah, they set up a fire afterwards and started singing campfire songs.
Kumbaya.
Anyway, that's my adventures in exercise. Now, as I mentioned before, restrictions are easing, more people getting out and about, people catching up with friends for the first time in a couple of months, which is awesome. But as always, when things are relaxed, there will always be people that take it just that little bit too far. And I'm sure we've seen examples, around the world of that. It is a little bit disappointing, really. I feel like it's great to go and sort of catch up and that sort of thing and do it in a safe way. But people who are sort of celebrating this now as, it's all over. We can just go and do whatever we want. It seems a little premature. And if we sort of, 50 years into the future, historians writing about this period, people spent 2 months inside, to combat the spread of a disease. I feel like we haven't earned that big celebration yet, but some people are going off a bit early.
I get the feeling, you're right, that people do just assume things are over, things are fine now. For some cafes and restaurants, I think that's the restriction that's been kind of eased in New South Wales at the moment. You can have 10 people in a cafe or restaurant now. And as soon as they announced that, there was a huge debate of why pubs and clubs also, like people saying, oh, we're just going to go to the pub now, order. Basically, they ended up easing them for pubs and clubs as well. People were going, ordering a bowl of chips and having five drinks at the same time, like just defeating the whole purpose of the restriction. But I think we do have to be careful because there is quite a chance that this celebration, when they do ease them to a larger degree, people will just descend on some of these places because, oh my God, I haven't done it in X number of months. I have to do it now. Everyone do it at once. That's kind of how second waves and stuff happen, we're told by the medical people. But it does frustrate me a bit that people seem, so intent that they have to get out and do stuff they did before. Like they can't have a few days off it and slowly ease back into it. It has to be jumped straight back into it.
Yeah, it has been interesting. I guess our restrictions have been slightly different to yours because we went into a hard lockdown. And now we've gone down to level two where we can kind of socialise a bit more and bars and restaurants are now opened. I was there over the weekend with some friends and it actually didn't feel that different to before the lockdown. There was a little more space between tables and there was a lot more hand sanitizer. And that was really about it. And you would line up a lot more. It felt very British in the sense that to get anywhere. So I think, we, like you guys are saying, I'm kind of expecting a second wave. Just because you've seen it in other countries that had a grip over it, like Singapore and Taiwan and South Korea. But I think we have the processes now to contact trace pretty quickly, and it's just something that we're just going to have to get used to, I think.
On the same topic, just sorry to interrupt, one thing that's really, really annoyed me, I'm a fast walker, and I work in a shopping centre kind of complex. The slow walkers in socially distant time really need to sort their shit out. Like... you try to keep distance, but at the same time, you can't. It's almost comical having to slow down that much to keep yourself away from people, or like four people walking alongside each other so slowly that you can't get past. I feel as though maybe there needs to be some kind of fast walkers union, or even if they're going to do bike lanes as well, split like a swimming pool, have a slow, medium, and fast lane, where people can walk at whatever speed necessary so we can still keep distance and not have the frustration.
I've always felt that people in Sydney always walked with a purpose, though. Maybe it's just the areas in Sydney I've been. Because I remember whenever I've been there on holiday, I would kind of dawdle and have a look around, and you would always hear this disapproving, like, tisk sound, like, oh, by the locals that are trying to just get from point A to point B. So, I've been there. I know what you're talking about.
I expect it in the city because there are a lot of people, there are a lot of tourists, they're just having a look around, even people some people who don't get into the city a whole lot, they just want to go in, they want to look around, look at shops and whatever. When you, like, this shopping center, you should be in, out, I'm buying this, I'm buying that, getting my coffee, getting my food, I'm out of here. No, yeah. Oh, it's Dottle, I'm looking, oh, look, there's a news agent there, oh, there's a...
See, it only took me 3 days in Sydney to I got to that point where then I would see other tourists dawdling and I'd be like, oh my God, that's so slow.
One of us. Now, to be honest, the lockdown, I'm kind of course, we want, you know, businesses to reopen, people to remain in jobs, new jobs to be created, the economy to be, you know, ticking along, and we want things to return to normal. But I'm concerned if things go back to normal, I've got way too many TV shows that I need to catch up on. And this period has, so like I've broadened, with no sport on, I've broadened my horizons and gotten into a whole, like, different raft of things on various streaming services. Also enjoying sampling various different things from restaurants and cafes I've never been to, but just at the tap of a button can order it from Uber Eats or Deliveroo, whatever your preferred delivery service is.
The future.
I know. And and online shopping as well. I feel like I could possibly never go to this is a huge exaggeration. I'm sure I will in the next few months go to a brick and mortar store again, but you can pretty much buy everything you need online. So is there any real point in going anywhere? I mean, it's nice to see
people. I need a new pair of shoes. I need a new pair of shoes, which is one of the hardest things to buy online, because, and particularly when you've got like ridiculously awkward feet like me, I like some places I'm a size, whatever. Like I there's about a 4 size range that I can fit into depending on the brand and style of shoe. So online shopping for something like that for me is just a waste of time.
I was going to say, how would your feet be awkward? Do they like find it uncomfortable in group situations?
They're very shy, introverted.
Bad with small talk, yeah.
All right. Well, I'm glad we haven't booked your shoes for the next spot. Your feet for the next podcast. Anyway, the idea of a Trans-Tasman bubble has been floated. That would pretty much work well for this podcast. It'll work well for me, given that New Zealand is the only country I've traveled to since the year 2000. It could be a goer.
It would be amazing. Yeah, I think by the sounds of it, over the last couple of weeks, both governments have been talking about it. And if we can figure out a way that doesn't require us to each quarantine in each other's countries for 14 days before we start our holiday, which would probably end up being like 3 hours before we get back on a plane and go back to our own countries to quarantine for another 14 days, that would be amazing. I think it'd be really cool. And I think it benefits both economies. You could get the sports. I guess the Warriors are already over there getting ready for the start of the season very shortly. But yeah, I think it would be an amazing kind of little treat and safe haven if we can kind of guarantee that. And yeah, kind of the Anzac spirit again.
I agree. I think it's a great idea. I mean, and it is something that we're so distant from the rest of the world, in one sense, that we can do something like this, and our governments are close. You know, they may not agree on everything, or they definitely don't agree on everything, but at the same time, they're able to work. There's enough between us to work together and make sure that these kind of little things can happen, where people from New Zealand can go and spend a weekend on the Gold Coast in winter and heat up, or, you know, Aussies can go skiing in New Zealand as a little bit of a holiday treat that everyone kind of didn't expect for another 18 months.
Isn't it faster to, for you guys to fly from Sydney to Queenstown to ski than it would be to go drive to the mountains?
Correct. Yeah. it's about a 6-hour drive, I think, to Thredbo from Sydney. And that's you know, having a good run. If you go in ski season, it can be...
It's like 3 hours. I think it's 3 hours to Sydney, Queenstown, and then maybe like another 45 minutes from Queenstown to the mountains.
And probably a better ski field too. Not that I'm a skier myself, but...
Who'd have thought?
Yeah. I liked as well, Matt, how you said, you know, Kiwis can come over and spend time on the Gold Coast, where pretty much half of New Zealand resides.
We're already there. So...
It's Gold Coast or Bondi, one of the two.
Yeah. That's good. No, it's a good idea. And obviously, well, it'd be good to fire up the borders internally in Australia first, and then we'll get that Trans-Tasman bubble going. But should be excellent. Stockpiling. Remember that? panic buying. It seems like it's mostly passed. And just thought we'd take a quick moment to remember the phenomenon. For you guys, what was the strangest thing that people were panic buying? For me, it was absolutely toilet paper. Obviously, you know, probably the obvious answer, but I'm not entirely sure what people thought was going to happen if they didn't have, you know, like, we all need TP, of course, but, you know, you come down with the flu, you don't need 32 rolls to combat, you know, flu symptoms. It's good to see it back on the shelf.
I found flour most interesting one because outside of normal kind of baking recipes now, a lot of people wouldn't use it a whole lot. Like everyone said, oh, it's to make your own bread. How many people have the means to make their own bread? Like people were buying the massive 2-3 kilo massive bags of flour. You're never going to use all that. You're never going to use the 20 packets of pasta that you have. You're never going to use the... And yet every day, as I said, I work in a shopping centre. I go down to the local Woolworths. There is fresh food for days. And yet people don't even touch that. Like, I thought the one thing you'd want to go in every day and get is a thing of bananas, a thing of tomatoes, a thing of apples. But no, you want to bulk buy bloody toilet paper and paper towel because there's no toilet paper because, you know, that's a great replacement.
Shouldn't be flushing that.
Yeah, I think the toilet paper thing was outrageous here, especially because there was enormous panic over it, and we actually make it in New Zealand. So it was like, it's not an issue for New Zealand to produce it. We're not going to run out because we're going to be the ones to make it. So don't worry about it. But it just didn't stop anybody. And another thing I think was canned soup, instant soup packets. They were flying off the shelf. Yeah, the flour, I think, was also crazy, like Matt was saying, especially because in New Zealand, the issue wasn't being able to produce the flour, is that they couldn't produce the small bags for supermarket selling fast enough. So because the flour was often produced for bakeries and restaurants and stuff, they were sending these giant, you know, 20, 30 kilo bags of flour, but they didn't produce enough small bags to put the flour in to sell in supermarkets. So it was all just crazy. So that was probably the most wild thing, I think, as well.
I'm just picturing an entrepreneurial baker selling. So he gets his, you know, 100 kilos of flour or whatever, and he's just selling little Ziploc bags of flour.
He'd be very careful about the look of selling Ziploc bags with a white powder just for other purposes.
Yeah, when you're selling it per gram, when you're selling it per gram, it's a bit more awkward, isn't it?
Hey, it's hard to come by. You got to desperate times, right?
I do laugh about this too, but I've started stockpiling marble chocolate since they re-released marble in Australia. Yeah. So
it's only just made it to New Zealand.
The first time.
Yeah. I can't wait to try it.
To wrap this up, I just wanted to end, as we should end all discussions, on the topic of pants. I want to float this theory to you. I think the era of the hard pant is over. No longer do we have any need for jeans, that's how gone they are. I can't even think of other versions of hard pant. Basically, anything that's not trackies or shorts, gone, useless now.
That's music to my ears. No, I definitely agree with it. I've never been a pants guy to start with anyway, a hard pants guy. I've always worn track pants or... that sounded pretty wrong, actually, but I've never been a big fan of... the hard pants compared to jeans, compared to track pants or shorts. So having to not wear hard pants that I would usually wear in a work setting has been quite refreshing. I wore jeans into the office the other day and it was fine. It wasn't as nice as just being able to chill at home and in my active wear, but we may do. But I think there's probably a place for it, Matt. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I think so. There probably has been in general a casualization of... work attire in the last 5 to 10 years, I think. There are still a lot of places where suit, tie for the males and, you know, very formal dress for the females is still required, but it is definitely casualizing. I don't think we'll ever lose the hard pant, unfortunately, Adrian, unless you're working unless we do this whole work from home on a much more permanent basis, I think there is going to be a place for the hard pant. But yeah, all power to you if you want to go with the track pant or the hard short option.
Hey, well, you've reignited your platform, Adrian. So maybe this is the niche that we take who's playing who down.
The pants revolution.
Yeah.
As we alluded to earlier, sport is almost back in some shape or form. The NRL returning next Friday, the 28th of May. Next Thursday, even. I'm that excited. I don't even know what day of the week it's coming back. The 28th of May, anyway, we've got the full season draw. It's all happening, playing out of a handful of stadium. And the AFL June 11, from memory, not too far behind. The Bundesliga's back. It's pretty exciting. That sport-shaped void in our lives will soon be filled.
Yeah, it's exciting. The NBA also announced today, by 1st of June, they will have some plans potentially to reintroduce players, and they're talking about having a bubble kind of campus, maybe a Walt Disney World in Florida to host all the rest of the remaining season games in the playoffs. So that'll be interesting. We've got the Super Rugby starting up in a couple of weeks with just the domestic season with the five New Zealand franchises. And yeah, I guess there's only so much Korean baseball one can watch until one misses their own national sport, right?
Yeah, there's also the kind of aspect that there's more things like I'm a bit of a wagerer myself, so I don't mind a punt. There's a few of that'll come back outside of the Korean baseball, the Russian table tennis, the Ukrainian handball. For those keen followers of this last week tonight with John Oliver, the marbles series that he is sponsoring at the moment is making a comeback as well. So, you know, it's beyond just having NRL to watch four nights a week, which is just going to be glorious. There is world sport kind of coming back and things to gamble on.
Yes, unfortunately, the time in the sun that the niche sports that could still go ahead is slowly coming to an end, and we all return to watching what we enjoy. I found it interesting. I haven't really engaged with any of the sort of leagues that have still been happening. I've kind of just been waiting for what I used to watch to come back. And not, you know, I've done other things and watched other things and then just waiting for what I'm familiar with to return. I haven't really been caught up in the Belarusian Pro League or whatever the soccer premiership is over there. But one roadblock back that was a potential roadblock for the NRL was a group of anti-vaxxer players and their families threatening to sort of derail the plans that were in place. Most of them have either had a flu jab or Bryce Cartwright has signed a waiver in Queensland. He plays for the Titans. Matt, you know, had the potential to throw things off kilter, but it's sort of a wider issue.
Yeah, it's a wider issue that evokes a lot of emotions for people on both sides of the debate. One side being the large, large majority of society, the other side being a small sect of people. We were talking about cults before. You could almost put them into that kind of realm of people who seem to believe. And, you know, amazingly, some of them seem to make some money out of it as well. Don't want to speculate too much, but everyone's entitled to their own opinions. But I think in a situation like this, cooler heads need to prevail, and we need to put public health above, you know, some weird beliefs that people get out of a discredited textbook from the 1960s or something. And fortunately in this case, and there was, to be fair to a few of the players in the NRL situation, there was a few of them who it was genuinely just a bad reaction, one time taking a flu shot, and they were probably a bit poorly educated in that the flu shot changes every year. So it's not the same thing you're getting injected with every year. So, but in that case, they have gone and got it. I think Bryce Cartwright somehow got a medical exemption. Yeah, all power to him. But the fact that that was a possibility of keeping the competition up was going to be a really bad look.
It all comes down to a lack of education, I guess. I suppose people don't really understand how vaccines work, and then they kind of get sucked into these, you know, influencers or, you know, people in the anti-vaxxer community that sort of fill the void in their mind where real science should be, and they take hold and they kind of, you know, glamorize it a bit, and it sort of spreads, you know, much like panic buying. You see someone loading up their trolley with 10 things of toilet paper and you kind of instinctively, you know, jump to that. I suppose if you don't, if you're kind of a bit skeptical or you don't have that understanding of how these things work, you can get sucked in if you're, you know, a bit gullible and into believing that flu vaccines might, you know, cause all sorts of issues.
Yeah, well, it's an echo chamber, especially on social media these days. You kind of, you start following and liking things that match your tendencies and what you like, and then that's all what you basically see. The algorithm kind of adjusts, and that's all that's filled up on your timeline. So it is, it's definitely an educational thing, and people are going to make the decisions that they make for the reasons that they make them. But I just think, yeah, you have to be as educated as possible. And if you have that belief, then you can back it up with reason and logic and science, I guess, is kind of, you know, like, come on, man, it's not like the whole science community is kind of just like ganging up on to prove you wrong for some reason. Like, it's science for a reason, because it's tested and it's hypothesized, and they actually do the work for it. So it is what it is.
I think the other issue as well, there is this general feeling around the world, the Western world particularly at the moment, of kind of distrust of institutions, and science unfortunately falls into that part of distrust. It's people and people are kind of egged on institutions. So that kind of continues to egg on this belief that vaccines cause harm intentionally, or that there's something that, you know, is just a choice, you can do it. It should be a lot simpler than that, that this is the reason that we don't have a lot of diseases anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
How good's polio?
Wouldn't know, got the vaccine, so, you know.
I think all we've right. Got our promo clip there.
To sum it all up, go and get the flu vaccine for this year, and hey, when the COVID-19 vaccine, if that ever comes to fruition, better get that too. Yes, it is the phenomenon that's been sweeping the world on ESPN in the US, Netflix, everywhere else. The Last Dance, Chicago Bulls, Michael Jordan. What an absolute unbelievable documentary. So well put together. It's funny, my fiance, she was joking around. She thought it might have been, she knew it was all basketball and all that. She thought it might have been a sort of a dance documentary at one point, as a bit of a joke, or the sequel, long awaited sequel to Mao's Last Dancer, which would have been huge, but it wasn't. I was a little disappointed. No Luke Longley. He wasn't interviewed. He wasn't a part of it. You sort of just saw him in the huddle, you know, doing layups. That was about it. In terms of the involvement. So given he wasn't mentioned hardly at all in the series, I wanted to get him out first. Absolutely criminal he wasn't involved.
I guess they had enough white people that they were interviewing, enough centers and stuff that they got throughout the entire series. Bill Weatherington, Steve Kerr, John Paxson, they had it covered. But yeah, no, Luke Longley was a contributor on those in that second run. I think he got 3 rings out of it. So arguably one of Australia's most successful athletes. So yeah, and you know, I can understand why you feel livid, mate.
Well, admittedly, he sort of lives in this rural town in Western Australia and is sort of cut off contact with the rest of the world. So maybe there's a bit more to it than just him being
maybe
snubbed.
He just missed the call. Maybe MJ texts him, was like, hey, I got this documentary that I'd like to be in, and you said no reception.
There's also a group, or not a group, a probably a generation of Australians who didn't know he was necessarily that so heavily involved. They come up and see Australian baseball today with the Ben Simmons, they see the Andrew Bogut, they see the, you know, I don't know, go Dante Exum or Joe Ingles.
Patty Mills.
Like, they see a lot of great Australian basketball players killing it in the NBA. They don't know that there was a guy that played with Michael Jordan and won 3 rings with Michael Jordan. They see him only as, if they watch obscure Boomers games, the guy that tried to tackle one of the players in the game against the Philippines or Indonesia, whatever it was, a couple of years ago. But yeah, there's speculation about why he wasn't involved, and, you know, relationship breakdowns and other things that may have happened. It's disappointing, but I tried to look beyond that and just view it as he was still a very major part of that, and the fact that he wasn't in the doco is disappointing, but still doesn't take away from the fact that, yeah, he was a fantastic player in that team and a key part of the way that team played.
Now, this was a key moment. I'll play the audio in a sec, but when I was watching the show, I actually, you know, I was making notes and like, oh, this quote is amazing. This like summarizes the whole thing, and made the note and then realized like there was about 10,000 articles written about it subsequently. So I thought I was like really clever and, you know, really observant. But anyway, here it is. Take a listen and we'll discuss it after this.
When people see this, they're going to say, well, he wasn't really a nice guy. He may have been a tyrant. Oh, well, that's you, because you never won anything. I wanted to win, but I wanted them to win and be a part of that as well. I don't have to do this. I'm only doing it because it is who I am. That's how I played the game. That was my mentality. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way. Break.
So that bit, I thought, really summed up how he was. Just the ultimate competitor. He dragged his teammates kicking and screaming all the way to the top. Well, I suppose they weren't kicking and screaming. They bought in to what, you know, they're there to win too. But he dragged them all the way to the top. And, you know, he was, it doesn't really matter if you, you know, aren't his best mate. He got the results.
Let's be honest. He was a bit of an asshole. But he said it in the documentary, like, there's nothing that he asked of his teammates that he wouldn't do himself. And he was so hyper competitive in everything that he did. And you saw it in the documentary of the footage, gambling on the plane. He would play 36 holes of golf the day of a playoff game and then go and score 55 points. He was so petty that he would create these like fake challenges for himself, these fake slights of what other players said to him that they didn't even say to him. And he would gamble. He would tell airport security to put his bag out first and then bet teammates that his bag would come out first. Or you saw the clip of him throwing quarters against the wall against his own security guards. He was incredibly driven, and he had this amazing combination of the talent to back it up, this competitive streak that he would go gambling during, you know, the day before a playoff game. And he also had the work ethic to back it up. And so when you put that all together, you can see when he says that clip that he can't fathom people not taking the game as seriously as him. And I think that's what made him one of the most incredible athletes that has ever lived.
I want to touch on some of those feuds you mentioned that he sort of sparked himself, or, you know, used it as inspiration. Karl Malone and Russell in the 97-98 sort of series or couple of series with the Utah Jazz. Clyde Drexler a bit earlier on, Isaiah Thomas and the Pistons. It seemed like the worst thing you could do was get in his face and say, I'm better than you, or I'm going to beat you. The best thing to do would be just be friendly. And he probably wouldn't go as hard.
It wouldn't even matter. Like, you saw, it wouldn't even matter, because there was that clip before the 96 finals where he was in that restaurant, and he was saying that he walked past George Karl, one of the coach of the Supersonics, and George Karl didn't even say anything to him. So that was what triggered him. If George Karl had said something to him, he would have thought, no, you don't talk to me like that. I'm going to destroy you. So throughout the documentary, players were saying, you know, you don't look at him in the eyes. Don't talk to him because that would aggravate him. Like the fear that he brought was incredible. And there was one clip, I think, near the end of the documentary where they were saying, you know, don't talk smack to him. And he'd been retired for 3 years. And then he came back and kicked their asses. Like, who is this guy?
Oh, that was incredible at the end when, you know, he said, oh, we could have gone for number 7. We could have got everyone back, you know, for that year. And the fact that it still bugs him after all this time, that they didn't win a 7th, just shows you how incredibly it's just always that next thing he wanted to win, always wanting to win. Just incredible. We did see a softer side to him, though, his relationship with his father and also one of his security guards, Gus, after his father died and they won that game on Father's Day, and he was in tears. You know, that I think that was that iconic image of him in the dressing room, you know, crying it was just after one of their championships, right?
Yeah, I think it was the 4th championship. It was the first one of the second three-peat, and they had just beaten, I think it was Seattle. And it was on Father's Day.
Yeah.
First championship without his dad. He's got the basketball and he's crying on the ground. And actually, that was something that stuck with me, because I'd seen the image before, but I'd never seen the audio with it. And to see that, he's just crying. That's the kind of footage that these kind of documentaries, that when you have creative control and Michael Jordan has to have final approval, that, you know, you often wouldn't see this stuff. But the fact that he has creative control and gives you access to it, you have all this footage from these seasons that is new to people. It's pretty awesome.
I found it really interesting, the fact that they still, like, that this is almost 30 years ago, yet they had the forethought, because none of this has been seen before, the forethought to follow these people around, maybe not 24/7, but pretty much all of their work, anytime they're at the gym training, anytime they're on the court training, anytime they were flying between cities at games, in the locker room, there was a camera there. This is the kind of stuff that teams do now, and like they're opening them up to do now, and they make great documentaries. Amazon seems to have a lot of these now, where they follow individual players or teams. It amazes me that kind of 25 years ago, there was some thought that this could be something that people would be interested in. And clearly people are interested in, like, it's rated very well, it's talked about everywhere. And you kind of get to see, yes, he's got creative control. So there's kind of you may be able to argue that the image of MJ is always going to be the best one. He's got control over what you see. But at the same time, it's still him. Like, it's what people have been describing him as driven, as competitive. And he doesn't, you know, shy away from the fact that that's the way he is. And sometimes that gets offside with people.
I would just say, yeah, I would pay to watch 10 episodes of just their practice footage. Them, like, some of the best stuff is just them going up and down the court, like, shit-talking each other at practice, or like the 92 Dream Team scrimmages, or I wish they had more footage of him at the Warner Brothers studio while he's filming Space Jam.
Yes.
And those runs with the NBA All-Stars as he's preparing to come back. Like, that stuff is so cool to have that footage. I just wish there was more of it.
Maybe they'll do like a deep dive or a deep cut or something.
Give me 10 hours of Michael Jordan looking at an iPad of watching other people's interviews and him just laughing at the shit that they're saying about him. I love that.
I loved how he rolled his eyes as they handed him the iPad each time.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, here's what this guy has to say. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just a couple of quick fire things to wrap up the Last Dance chat. Noticed he was consumed a lot of media, so watched a lot of TV, was reading the paper a lot. Obviously, you know, this is pre-internet and all that. Well, I guess the internet was around, but not as we know it, you know, no smartphones and that sort of thing. But it was interesting to see he would watch, you know, reviews, match reports, you know, of the team's performance and that. When a lot of the athletes today are like, yeah, no, I don't read the paper, you know, that's all just rubbish, I feel like he knew what was going on. I guess he was just operating on a whole other level. So he kind of, it didn't really matter, you know, faze him at all.
Any slight that he could come up with to motivate him further, or any potential rival that was having press that they people the media might have thought was better than him. He would just use his fuel. It was crazy, and it comes back to that that dedication to his craft. I guess he would watch every game to find out what he did wrong and what he could improve on. And you hear that from other athletes. You know, I'm sure Tiger's the same, and Messi and Ronaldo and Kobe was the same as well. So those kind of masters of their craft that like that look for that 1-2% extra that separates them from everyone else. It's just that dedication.
I think there's also the mindset in the way they work with the media and can use the media to kind of fire things up. Or just pull back, and it's no impediment to them. Like you look at him, it's the players today, you know, they've really cured images of themselves. Media managers at clubs, particularly in countries like Australia and New Zealand, really try to keep things so insular. They're really protective of people. Like he's got 20,000 microphones in his face 30 seconds after the game every single night. And he's got no problem with that. And he might say something with the point of firing up someone so that he knows he's going to take down that rival the next night. It might be an internal motivation for him to say, you know, I'm going to take down Carmelo, or he takes him down the next night. There is a mindset there and a drive there that you probably don't see as much in today's athletes.
I found it funny. I saw a story on Anthony Milford saying, you know, how he was sort of inspired by the show. And one of the lines in the story was, you know, Milford, who hasn't given an interview in 12 months, you know, come on, you look, they're missing the point here. it's such a powerful tool. And just having that relationship with the press as well in terms of, you know, keeping things friendly. I mean, you just answer the questions. We saw him, you know, walking to the arena. I think it was in one of the last episodes. And he's like, come on, guys, can't I just walk in peace? You know, I love you guys. He was still kind, you know, didn't sort of brush people off in a harsh way and was seemed very generous with his time. So I feel like reporters would look more favorably on, you know, obviously he's a tremendous athlete, perhaps the best of all time, but they look more favorably on athletes who, you know, are at least respectful and give a bit of their time and just answer the questions and that sort of thing. And because ultimately journalists frame how the public sees these athletes at the end of the day. So it's in their best interest to be open and all that. So we'll see if there's been any athletes inspired by the doco and see how they respond.
Do you think we'll get a new wave of athletes just being complete assholes to their teammates?
Oh yeah,
I think that exists as it is, to be fair.
Now they're just going to justify it by saying, hey, you know, MJ used to do it, so
people will start looking around and saying, looking at the players that kind of move club to club to club to club who are very good, and you think, oh, maybe there's just something in it, maybe he's the MJ of that team.
A couple of other quick things that I noticed just before we wrap this up, Steve Kerr and John Paxson, I love those moments of those guys hitting those clutch shots. That was brilliant. You know, that's sort of the team guy who came good. And also, has Reggie Miller actually aged? I swear he looks exactly the same as when he was playing.
He's a very youthful-looking man, eh? He's kept himself very, very youthful-looking since his playing days. It's almost been 20 years probably since some of that footage.
Yeah, absolutely. He's the Raymond Yee of the NBA.
Some would say.
You know, there's a lot of those people who have hardly aged in, you know, 20, 25 years. And then there's other ones that you look at and go, oh, my God, how are you the same age as this person?
The crazy thing about Reggie is that, like, often professional athletes, once they retire, right, because they stop playing high-intensity sports or whatever, they often put on a lot of weight, right? Whereas Reggie Miller looks like he could go and play 10 minutes a night now for the Indiana Pacers if he needed to.
Yeah, I mean, how are they going at the moment? Are they? Well, I know they're not playing, but this season,
I think
how are
they? They're doing all right. I think they're mid-playoff spots in the East. So, they're doing all right.
Okay, so they're not in desperate need of...
No, they could use another shooter, though.
The Bulls could probably use MJ, I think, at the moment, too.
I loved at the end of the documentary how it was like they enlisted everyone. You know, they moved on, they got traded, they retired. The Bulls began starting their rebuild. And everyone knows, like, they've been rebuilding ever since. Like, you didn't have to put that. They've been terrible ever since then.
They thought they had MJ again in Derrick Rose.
Yeah. Then his knees went.
All right. Well, it's been wonderful chatting through The Last Dance with you both and everything, really. A great show. And I'm really enjoying the sort of month break in between episodes as well. I know we had a big 7-year gap, but the month gaps, you know, gives me time to sort of recharge the batteries after an editing session. And, you know, we sort of build up a cachet of stuff to chat about. So maybe the month gap will continue. I don't know. Sporadic podcasts. Who knows when we'll be back next time. But thanks to you both, Matt and Tomo. And thanks to you for listening. I just realized we forgot a few of Shippy's comments. So I'll quickly rattle them off as well just before we go. He wanted to say he enjoyed The Last Dance. He thought MJ was a bit of a dick, but got the best out of his team. He wouldn't want to have his lifestyle, though. He also said, how cool would it be to see prime matchups across the generations, MJ versus LeBron, Virat Kohli versus Shane Warne, Pele versus Ronaldo and Messi, and, of course, T-Pain, as we mentioned earlier, who knew he could actually sing. So we didn't forget you, Shippy. We got you in there. But we'll be back in the near future. And remember, for the weekend ahead, all that matters is who's playing who. 'Cause I just want to move, yeah, yeah. And you can come too, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's me plus you, yeah, yeah. So tell me what we gonna do, yeah, yeah. 'Cause I just want to move, yeah, yeah. And you can come too, yeah, yeah. And one time for the crew, yeah, yeah. So tell me what we gonna do, yeah, yeah. I know you heard it all before, but I can find a flaw, and that I can't ignore. Wanna know who you are, you probably get this all the time. You're welcome to decline. Since the minute that I seen you, baby girl, been on my mind.
You bet.
Okay, so
you missed a hard dance chat.
The funniest thing was this: just a normal smile was the freeze.
As if you were enjoying it.
Yeah, you were just sitting there. You could quite easily have sat there for 30 seconds, holding that face, and wouldn't have a clue that you were actually frozen.